everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to The Love Code. It's wonderful having you join me. You know, I say this every time, but it's true. I'm so thrilled to be able to share these wonderful conversations with everyone because they are so uplifting and inspiring, which you know is the whole purpose for The Love Code. It's to provide a vehicle with inspiring conversations that allow us to reconnect to who we are, to open our hearts, to find a place of healing within us. And that's just such an important thing, such an important journey we are all on right now. And I trust that this show is supporting everyone in this time of remembering and reconnecting and opening our hearts. And if you are listening for the very first time, thank you so much for joining me. If you would like to get the archive shows so you don't have to miss out on any of them, you can do that either by going to my website and just opting in there to the newsletter, which is dr for Dr. Cheryl Selman.com, drcherylselman.com, or you can go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. So What Women Must Know is my most active Facebook page, and that name comes from the other program I do here on Progressive Radio Network, and that's called What Women Must Know, of all things. And if you opt in or opt into my website or go to the Facebook page, of course you will get both of these shows, and they are places of great education, inspiration, and transformation. So I look forward to having you join me. And today we have another wonderful conversation of inspiration and transformation. I just have to kind of give you a little kind of prelude to what we're going to say. I recently spent a week at Rythmia Life Advancement Center. I'm sure you've heard me talk about it. It's in Costa Rica. It is the only medically licensed plant medicine center in the world, and this is a place where I go, and I've gone twice a year for the last 4 years and have encouraged people to go and experience for themselves the power, the healing power of the ancient and traditional healing plant medicine called ayahuasca. So I've had many speakers and guests on my show talking about the power of nature for our own spiritual transformation. And I was so fortunate because the week I was there, they always have a special guest lecturer. And I was really blessed because the week that I was there with my group, we had the wonderful opportunity to experience the power, the joie de vie, the joy of dance with the special guest who is Parashakti. And she, well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about her because she's with us today, and I'm so excited to have her on the show. So Parashakti Shamanic Healing was born of more than two decades of experience facilitating workshops, trainings, and retreats around the world in Los Angeles, New York, Mexico, Bali, Guatemala, Indonesia, Israel, and Greece. She was certified as an integral yoga teacher, a kundalini yoga teacher, Esalen massage practitioner, and studied with some of the world's most revered spiritual masters, including Swami Satchidananda, Anna Halperin, Dr. Gabriel Cousins, and Lakota Elder Waka'i Un Mani. A lifelong dancer, her path as a healer followed a severe injury, a period of what is often called shamanic dismantling, after which her mission shifted towards healing. Over the last 20 years, Parashakti developed the Seven Foundations and the Dance of Liberation. As MAP's former own spiritual practice, living and breathing these foundations in daily ritual. Since she founded Dance of Liberation, it's been practiced by over 10,000 dancers around the globe. It was born of a mission to help people experience ecstasy. Above all, she is dedicated to serving community, creating a sacred container where people feel safe enough to experience their deepest essences, honor their voices, and shine their brightest light. And I just want to add one more thing before I invite Parashakti to be with us. There is a new documentary on Gaia Network. If people have not been there, it's GAIA.com. It's where I go to watch inspirational movies and documentaries. I've kind of given up my Netflix, and I'm now all in on Gaia. And she has her documentary, or the documentary of Parashakti's journey and story of her life and her teachings, is right there. It's called The Dance of Liberation, and it's a documentary found on Gaia.com, which is wonderful, and I highly recommend it. So we have this dynamic, passionate woman with us today, and I want to personally and joyfully welcome Parashakti to the show today. So hello there, Parashakti.
I've been smiling the whole time. If we were live, you know, with my face showing, you would see. But yes, big, big heartfelt smile to you, Dr. Cheryl. What an honor to be here with you.
Well, it's so much fun having you on the show, because now, you know, we're friends. So before you
Yay.
Were this, you know, amazing woman who did all these incredible things and traveled around the world, and now you're a friend, and I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that we were there together at that week in Rhythmia, and we made a wonderful connection, and here we are. So it's just continuing as kind of sisters on the journey. And, you know, you're amazing, Parashakti. I just want to acknowledge you for the path you have created for yourself, the fascinating journey you've been on, which really is highlighted in your documentary, from this little girl in Israel who really struggled with learning because of dyslexia, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise. And here you are traveling around the world and inspiring and teaching your healing path. So maybe the best place to begin is to talk about your beginnings and share a little bit about your journey that brought you to this place in life.
Okay, yes, beautiful. So, you know, I started dancing when I was 4 years old. And it was really my way to express every single part of my being. And already at age 7, I knew that I wanted to be a professional dancer. And I really, as you learned about me, because of these severe learning disabilities that I was diagnosed with at the age of 7, which was in first grade, ever since then, I just really danced my way through grade school and high school. I was lucky enough that my mom really was such a big supporter in my mission of dance, and so I went to performing arts schools. And the dance was my savior. The dance was where I was able to, override any of these labels that I was labeled with. And they were very real, you know. And, I didn't have any sort of connection to the world of shamanism, which later I was introduced to it because of my injuries. In that period of time, at such a young age, knowing what my mission and my drive and my passion was again, what I call my savior from these learning disabilities. And then what really I like to call the dark night of the soul was when I pursued my dance as a career after the army and in Israel, and came to the state to pursue my dance. And I had my second severe injury. My first one was not a wake-up call. I just was in a cast and suffered a great deal. But my second severe injury was when literally, like, everything stopped for me. My mission was put on hold. I asked myself some incredibly big, big questions that allowed me to touch upon grief and fear and also work with these learning disabilities that I was diagnosed with, that I somewhat was able to, as I said, dance through and not really need to deal with them. And I felt paralyzed. And not only was I physically paralyzed, I was also emotionally, mentally, and spiritually paralyzed. And it was then that the break happened, that I call it, as you so well, you know, described and read, the dismantling happened. And when the dismantling happened, it was a loss. You know, they call it soul so lost. And that's exactly what I experienced. And very slowly, as I began to heal my physical body, and I actually found yoga throughout that practice, I started piecing myself back together. And it was through the practice, first and foremost, of yoga that I was able to find a sense of peace within the chaos of my life. And it was one of the biggest gifts of a break, of a physical, physical deep, deep pain that I started with the yoga practice, closing my eyes and beginning through the asanas to start hearing like a higher voice. And again, then I didn't know that they were spirit guides or even languaging I didn't have. And literally one thing led to the next. And I decided that I wanted to dedicate myself to yoga. And I ended up living at the Integral Yoga Ashram. And that was under Swami Sachidananda. In 1999, I got my spiritual name, Parashakti, which means the supreme feminine power. And what's so interesting about my spiritual name is that my last name, Bat Chaim, means daughter of life. And Parashakti is the mother of life. And my teachers didn't know that, what my last name meant. And so I just really felt how the evolution of my call, my soul call, was shaping itself, was dancing itself into a reality that I had no idea. And really when I surrendered to that call is when it was literally a map of my soul was starting to dance its way into what I do today, which is the modality that I've birthed, Dance of Liberation. So that's in the big nutshell. Of course, there's a lot more that I can acknowledge, but I will give the energetic talking stick to you if you have a question.
Okay. So let's go back. So tell us more about that injury, because it's such a fascinating process when we are going down a certain path in life, and then an event happens. It could be an injury, could be being fired from a job, it could be a divorce, it could be what would be perceived as a catastrophic, you know, event. But actually, it's those events, especially with hindsight, as we move through them and on past them, they are all blessings in disguise. So tell us more about what happened with that severe injury, and it sounded like you had some paralysis for a while.
Yes. So I was actually, trying to get my AA degree in Santa Monica College, right? Because we finish high school and then we go straight into the Army in Israel. And I decided that because I wanted to pursue my dance career, that I would go to the States and I would be a dance major. And I wanted to go to Cal Arts, and I had to get my AA degree. And so I enrolled in Santa Monica College underneath the dance program of the dance major. And, of course, was also part of the Learning Disability Center, because I really, in grade school and high school, I just did not study. You know, I didn't study. And so it was very, very, very challenging. And I was prepping. I was 3 days before a performance, which I had somewhat of a main role in Santa Monica College. And it was in rehearsal, and that's where I injured myself. And really when I look back at it, what I feel is that I wasn't in alignment with my mission. And so I wasn't able to see it, because also for so many years I used dance in order to be able to deal with my learning disabilities. And so here I had to face myself with this injury that I could no longer get up on stage and shine my light and dance my way through everything and prove myself, you know. And so my ego needed to break. And it was only then, when I didn't have any more my physical body to be of this utmost expression of, you know, of this mission, that I had to look inward and really start to as I said before, ask myself some very deep, deep questions and go on a journey of healing. And I had to heal these parts of me that, again, didn't need to deal because I had danced to you know, like I almost look at it now, and it's funny that I should say this, but I feel like it was a crutch, even though it was my mission, it was also a crutch. And so the profound healing happened when I was able to work with the pain that actually had a voice, and I was able to listen to it. Because the first injury at 17, which was a dislocation in my knee, and I was in a cast for 6 months in Israel, I can't call it a wake-up call. It was just like, oh, you know, I was depressed that I couldn't dance, but it wasn't where I got shaken up. It wasn't like the tsunami wake-up call. The second injury was, and it was, again, the best gift I could have received in order to do what I do today.
It's always fascinating for me to, when I listen to people's stories, it's to see how our soul is guiding us on our path, but it's always, well, let me just say, it's not always understood by our ego, right? So there are these events that make us stop, that cause us a considerable amount of discomfort, if not pain, and often it spirals into this dark night of the soul where we lose the belief systems that have created us to be who we are, so we can really emerge into a greater self and a greater path. So everyone goes through them, as a matter of fact. I don't think anyone really escapes this lifetime without having at least one dark night of the soul, because it is the emergence of the self. It's like a caterpillar coming out from the chrysalis, that you come out new, but there's a dissolution that goes on. I mean, that's such a great metaphor that's been used in all spiritual traditions, right? Because the caterpillar has to totally dissolve itself first in order to become the butterfly. You know, think about it.
Exactly.
Think about yourself. It's totally dissolved into mush.
Right.
And then this magical process happens where it gets reassembled into something totally new. Totally new and more magnificent, if we were to judge.
Absolutely.
If we were to make judge, you know.
Yeah, no, it was a total rites of passage and an initiation. And, you know, those incredible words that I just used, the going on a vision quest, like that language I didn't have. And I was slowly, like, when, as you said, when we opened, like, it's a time of remembering and reclaiming parts of you that you didn't even know that were going into and on that journey in that direction. So yes,
exactly.
You know, everyone does go through a dark night of the soul. And and it's just, you know, and I also work with people in treatment that are in recovery, and if they didn't have a program, or if they didn't have a mentor, or if they didn't have their, you know, counselor, or, you know, again, the treatment program, whether inpatient or outpatient, if they didn't have it, then maybe they wouldn't be able to survive their dark night of the soul. And so I'm really grateful that what I needed was, you know, I think those 2 years in the ashram that I spent really allowed me to create a safe container, which is actually the very first foundation of Dance of Liberation, is creating sacred space. And I really, as you read in my bio, it's like I live and breathe each foundation of Dance of Liberation, because for me, creating sacred space is the key, because I was in complete chaos when I, you know, went on my dark night of the soul. And I had to learn how to create the sacred space so that spirit can work through me. So that instead of me, you know, feeling so disconnected, so depressed, that I can actually utilize the spaces in me that need nourishment, that need care, or I should say higher level care, that I could learn to become my own medicine doctor. And so it was only by me creating sacred space that the external sacred space was actually living in an ashram. you know, where it was meditation at 5:30 a.m. and meditation at 8:30 p.m. And so I needed that in order to be able to develop and do what I do today.
Because if you didn't have that total breakdown and that traumatic event, you wouldn't be you. You wouldn't be here
right.
doing this work and taking it all over the world. So, you know,
right.
this is the journey that unfolds. And as I said, you know, we think we're going in one direction in life. Sometimes we are. But sometimes
right.
we have like a, you know, a 90-degree turn, and you're going in a totally
yeah.
different direction for your real purpose and mission. And, it's working through those times when it looks like our life is falling apart, but it's just the caterpillar turning into mush so it can become the butterfly, you know. And having support is necessary, whether it's a community or yoga. I often find astrology really helps me because that gives me a way to make meaning of challenging, difficult times. So whatever you use, you know, just to help you to have some sort of compass that can help you move through uncharted territories, unknown territories, that you don't even know what's up and what's down when you're in that place, right? It's just totally,
absolutely,
you know, like a void. It's like a void. So you spent these 2 years. So you were trained in yoga and meditation, but then your path took you on to work with Native American medicine men, or a specific medicine teacher. How did that happen, and what did you learn from that?
Yes. So it was very interesting. There was a yoga teacher at Integral Yoga that I became good friends with, and told me that he was dancing with the Mohawk, Cherokee, Shoshone, and Lakota natives. And the minute he said that, it was a knowing. It was just one of those things that I knew that I needed to attend this specific ceremony that was happening in New York once a year, and it was a 4-day dance. It still is a 4-day dance. It's called the Naraya. And the minute I started getting into the process, you're supposed to be gatekept by an elder. So an elder really prepares you to go on this quest, on this dance. And when I showed up to the dance, I felt at home in a way that I had never felt before. And I believe that because the teachings are earth-based medicine, and they're not coming from a religion, which, because even though I didn't grow up with my ultra, ultra Orthodox father, I rebelled very much against Judaism. And so to find a connection to source, to spirit, in a way that was being channeled through chanting, through dance, through sacred prayer, that made me feel at home. And that was and still is a dance that I'm committed to being a dancer at. And it's the 28th year now that it's danced. And I learned in the ritual, again, because I don't learn from books, I learned through participation and through going actually into spirit, the direction of which my soul has chosen, which was a very new direction, and how to implement my absolute joy and passion and mission for dance, and bridge the gap between the performance, I like to call it pray-formance, and really start to develop spirit dancing, because that's what we were doing. And so through the work that I did with my Native American elders, and also through another shaman that I worked with, Dance of Liberation was birthed. And the seven foundations came from the inspiration of the wisdom teachings of the medicine wheel in the Native American tradition. So the directions of the north, the south, the east, the west, the above, the below, and the self. And this
is a structure, a map of the soul in which you invoke power animals, you invoke the elements, you invoke the nature. And so that I felt so connected to in my body that it became the inspiration to the seven foundations of Dance of Liberation.
What a journey, right? What an amazing journey. It's taken you all over the world to all these spiritual traditions. Let's talk about dance. So what is the power of dance? And let's describe and define the type of dance that you are, that your work is presenting into the world.
Beautiful. So Dance of Liberation, as I've been sharing, is based on seven foundations. And as I shared, the first foundation is creating sacred space. The second foundation is the journey of intention. And so this is where the dancer is prepared and asked those soulful questions. What are you dancing for in your life? And, you know, it's very different from, let's say, just going to a club or even an ecstatic dance, because it's very free flowing and it's beautiful for what it is. And with what I developed, it's really a container that one can take an intention and a prayer and go on their own personal vision quest, because the third foundation is the blindfold. And I've been in a laboratory with a blindfold, without a blindfold, for 20 years. And I could say truly that the blindfold is a tool that allows you to go into that same darkness that I experienced and be able to work with your fears, to work with your doubts, to work with your shadow, and to be able to become friends with it. Because the way I see it is that I, for a very long time, when I was, quote-unquote, dancing with my shadow, when I was injured, I didn't have the tools to, at the beginning, to really work with it. And so here I'm creating a sacred container for people to be able to feel safe to confront the parts of them that they don't care for, that they deny. And so it's an invitation to call the shadow in the darkness and to begin a journey to dance with these parts of us. And we work with breath. We work with music that has most of the time no words, because I find, again, in the laboratory that I've been, I find that words dictate a story. So I find that you know, words can be, if I use words, then it's just mantra-based. And so the music is really, but also the guide into dreaming a new dream with the intention that the dancer creates and dances. And I also create a lot of community around this because, you know, when we go on our own personal vision quest, we have to also be able to take it out into the world. It's not enough just to have, you know, an epic experience, an epic journey. You know, we really need integration. And so what I've developed along the way is how to build community through this. So first and foremost, how to take what you learned on the dance floor and implement it into your everyday life, and then how to share it with the community. And I do this, especially when I have retreats or my trainings, I really develop what I like to call spirit buddies. So we put people into pairs and they really get to integrate with deep process work what they experience. And so there's a sense of also making sense out of it, because, again, sometimes we can go on these great, epic, altered states of, you know, of journeys if we're not grounded with what we experience, and we can't really make the change that's there for us to dance into when we are off the dance floor. So there's a beginning, middle, and end. And I like to quote my elders that once you dance in this way, your life is forever changed. And one of the reasons that I started making this film is because I was tracking my clients coming to the dance floor, creating an intention. For example, a woman wanted to get pregnant. She wasn't able to get pregnant. And she came over and over again when I had consistent weekly class, and she did my one-on-one program in New York, and she danced for it, and she was able to clear karma and to clear the blocked fear that she didn't even know that she had. And she did it herself. She didn't need someone else to do it for her. Again, when I said you become your own medicine doctor, so those are the tools that you receive between you, yourself, and spirit on what you need to do in order to create a pathway for whatever it is you're dreaming in your life to become a reality.
Wow. So this makes so much more sense to me now after I experienced the week with you in Rhythmia, because our culture is so much centered in our intellect, so, which is our greatest challenge, is overcoming our thinking mind, which really is the static that gets in the way of us having a deeper connection to our spiritual intuitive self. And I can certainly say I recognize that in me, that it's this mind, this thinking mind. One of my spiritual teachers does say that your heart is the message center. Your heart is where your soul resides. It's where you get your instructions, your information, your guidance. And in the mind is a servant to the heart. So it's to find way to implement and to bring into the world what your intuition, your heart is giving you. But it's generally the other way around in our culture. In fact, it's generally all our mind, very little our heart at all.
Yeah.
So we're so mental, right? So the dance, and when I experienced it with you this week, and during the ceremonies, the dance is a place where you are no mind. You are no mind. You just are listening and letting your body follow the rhythms, the impulses of the music. So your body does what it does, and you're just present. You're in the present moment. You're more in your heart, not in your head. You're not thinking of the right movement to make. It's not like a choreographed, you know, dance routine. You are letting the energy of the music, the spirit flow through you, and you're free to move. And when I experienced that, it was an experience of the joy of just the music and letting the body have the freedom to move, which we don't do in our culture very much at all, unless they probably go to your events. You know, I mean, we don't really dance much. And the other, I'm kind of rambling on here, but I'll just finish with this, Parashakti. The other realization is that how dance has always been a part of indigenous cultures and religious and spiritual ceremonies. It has always been there because it's a way where we can trance out, I guess you might say, get out of our head and connect to other dimensions of our being, which we don't really do as a Western culture very much. And we've lost something. And, you know, I just felt that we, oh, wow, to be able to do this, you know, on a weekly basis, come together, dance, have music, have live music, have drums, have, you know, just be able to let the tensions go would be so amazing. And I mentioned that to you. I just had so much more understanding and respect for the work that you do because it really was so liberating. Hence, you know, I can understand the liberation. It felt so liberating to be able to be in that, you know, moment of just being present with the music, with my body, with just the joy. And we all need more of that is what I have come to understand.
Yes, and you know, the beauty, Dr. Cheryl, is that anyone and everyone can do it. And so I've had people from, you know, little kids to 80-year-olds dancing the dance. And what I always say in Dance of Liberation is that you can't do it wrong. And so if you feel like you just want to be in Savasana, the relaxation pose on your back, and really go through a journey with the music and your intention, your spirit is dancing. And so there's just an infinite way of moving your prayer in motion. And it's it's my religion, you know? It's
yeah.
my religion for sure.
Yeah.
And it's what has freed me, you know? Prior to discovering this path, I was a dancer, although I didn't have a voice. I wasn't comfortable speaking in the way that I guide today. So there was something that I, because of being diagnosed, that I was so much more comfortable in just getting up on stage and just dancing. And I would light up a room just by getting up on stage as a little girl. And yet I didn't have that expression that I do today. And so I do believe that whatever imbalance I had by putting on the blindfold is how I personally healed the story or the of the learning disabilities. Now, it's not to say, like, I still, you know, it's very hard for me to comprehend material. I mean, I'm definitely a very, I have my own ways of learning, for sure. And I've accepted that. And it's an everyday dance with it, because it's not easy. It's not easy that sometimes, you know, there's a gap of history, you know, because I stopped studying in Israel in eighth grade. Again, I was in a performing arts school, so they said, you know, I was in the States from the age of, my mom's American, so I was born in Israel, in Jerusalem, and then my parents got divorced when I was one, and then when I was seven, my mom and I went to Los Angeles because she wanted to become a psychotherapist. And so from the age of 7 to 12, I was in Venice Beach. And, you know, those were that was the age when too, I was, thank God, put into performing arts schools and also danced my way through grade school. And I loved it. I really, because it was my way of expressing. Like, that's where I felt, you know, that I could get, you know, I guess the attention that I needed to give myself and the attention that I wanted, because in all other areas of school, I, you know, comparing myself to other students, I was stupid. I can't even go into it. It's so sad what I was
yeah.
thought about myself when I was growing up. But yes, it has freed me and it's given me a new language to speak. And it keeps on revealing itself over and over every single time I come back to this practice, which is every day. I have a very consistent, dedicated, inward practice of closing my eyes and journeying. And if I don't have space to officially move, if I'm airplane, I still close my eyes and put it on, my spirit dances, and I get information that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so interesting, because you have a totally unique way to learn. It's like
yes.
direct, you know, direct channel. It's not through the mind. I mean, there's
that's right.
stories of you know, these amazing spiritual beings who have great scientific knowledge but never learned it from a book, right?
Right.
They just went
right.
direct to the source.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Which is really what we want to do. We want to have direct experience. That's the power, as opposed to a concept.
Yes.
So how can people experience what you are doing? What are the ways that people can connect with you and learn more, either through dance or through consultations, programs? Tell us the different ways that people can experience more of your
yes,
work.
Yes, of course. Sure. So I'm in private practice in Los Angeles and New York, and soon to be Rhythmia. And when I say private practice, I do soul healing work. And this is shamanic healing. This is shamanic journeying work. And it's different types of prams that one can do with me. That is more of a one-on-one that turns into also apprenticeship, and then also into if they decide that they want to actually become Dance of Liberation teachers, I have a Dance of Liberation teacher training program. And I'm very excited because I'm actually on my way to New York to curate the very first Conscious Dance Division Center at the ashram that I lived at. So in 1999, where I lived for 2 years and got my name, Integral Yoga, we're bringing Conscious Dance to their center that's been around for 50 years. And I'm going to be bringing in all the different modalities, so Five Rhythms, Dancing Freedom, Koya, Continuum, Dance of Liberation, breath work. So, and if I've forgotten any, then I'm sorry, but there's going to be a really beautiful division at the center that's going to be specifically focused on conscious dance. And it's really the first time that this actually is ever happening, because these modalities are happening all around the world. Oh, yeah, Journey Dance. I must not forget Journey Dance. And so these modalities are very, you know, very successful around the world, but there's no center that actually has them under one roof. And so on Thursday, I have a Dream Council meeting. I'm gathering 20 of the founders, and we are sitting with the medicine of cacao, and we're creating a Dream Council and dreaming up in this beautiful six-story building in New York on 13th Street between 7th and 8th. A beautiful conscious dance center for our community there. And I'm also involved with ecstatic dance, which actually happens all around the world, but I'm specifically involved in L.A. and Los Angeles, L.A. and New York. And I am also excited to share that I have birthed a beautiful jewelry line, which is really a power object that's based in the medicine of the eagle. And eagle is the visionary. This is my spirit animal. This is really what has initiated me to be able to rise beyond my fears, beyond my limitations, and touch the great mystery and spread my wings and vision things into actually reality. This is the power animal that has taught me how to do that through dance. So I embody it. I wear it. I even have beautiful tattoos that are symbolically
your
have
wings.
That meaning and yes, my wings. And so that program is called the East Gate, and it comes with the power object. It comes with the jewelry piece, and it's very, very powerful. It's labradorite stone, and the labradorite taught me on the dance floor how to shapeshift. So that's really my stone of shape-shifting. So I'm very excited about that, because it's really newly kind of launched. And yes, so I would love to dance with anyone who is really ready to step into their dream and bring it into action.
So let me give your website, and I think the best one is parashakti.org. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
And I'm going to spell that for people. So it's P-A-R-A Shakti, Para Shakti, S-H-A-K-T-I.org, Parashakti.org. So people can learn more about what you're doing. And you might as well tell us about the program you're doing in Israel in November as well.
Yes.
Sounds
yes.
pretty amazing.
So, right, yes, I'm very, very excited. I'm collaborating with a few phenomenal wisdom teachers from the States, Kelly and Rudy and Sarah, and they each bring their own very beautiful carrying of their medicine, and we are going to be taking a group of wonderful journeyers to Israel, and the retreat is called Dancing in the Footsteps of Your Ancestors. And we're going to be visiting sacred sites, and we're going to be connecting to the land with Dance of Liberation. And so it doesn't matter what religion or tradition you are. I really feel that Israel is the birthplace of each and everyone to come and visit its roots. And there's medicine there for everybody. And so I'm really excited. I'll be collaborating there with a few other wisdom teachers that are based in Israel. We're going to also be part of a festival. So Israel has probably the most greatest yoga and dance festivals in the world. So we're going to be part of that festival called Nataraj. And we're going to do this as a 14-day excursion. And people will also be invited if they want to stay after. We have an amazing tour guide and also powerful wisdom teacher Zoal that's going to be there to be able to continue the trip if people want to. And we're actually doing preparations already now because the group that we're formulating are people who are really ready to quest deeper and to explore in a way that is not just going on a tour, because it's certainly not a tour. There's much more that goes into it. So we have a whole preparation for people who are interested. And that, too, you can just reach me through my website. And I'll also say that as you and I, Dr. Cheryl, are so dedicated and committed to Rhythmia. Rhythmia has Dance of Liberation as their closing ceremony every Friday. So both I know you and I just highly, highly can't recommend it more to go there and to go on a deep dive with their soul.
Oh, my gosh. I wish everyone would come along. Come along with me when I bring the groups down. And I do teach
yes.
there as well. So I'll be teaching there the week of December 13th. And I do my own teaching every week. They bring a teacher in, like they brought you, Parashakti. They bring people in. And so I feel very fortunate to be one of the guest speakers. And we're going to talk about rejuvenation, regeneration, and whatever else is on my menu at the time that I'm discovering.
Amazing.
When you're talking about Israel, it just brought back the memories of when I actually was on this whole pilgrimage that took me to Egypt, and we had time in the desert, and they put up a big tent in the middle of nowhere, and they had drummers, and they put the rugs down, and it was just desert all around us. We got there on camels, but that was so powerful to just be in the middle of the desert, which I'm sure you're going to be doing things like that in Israel, to feel and experience the power of the desert, which is
yes.
So profound. And I know, there's a strong connection between you and the desert and your father, because in
right.
the documentary, which I just want to remind people that they can watch the documentary about your life and your journey on Gaia, Gaia.com, and it's called The Dance of Liberation. So you can have this like personal connection with Parashakti if you watch the
mm-hmm.
documentary and listen to this conversation. But it's the desert where your dad was transformed, right? He was transformed from
yes.
a secular Jew to an Orthodox Jew.
Yes. Remember, be careful what you pray for. You might just get it. So, yes, my father was and still is a poet and a shaman in his own right, and he found God in the desert. And he, even before he became ultra, ultra Orthodox, he would literally, as my mom shared, would disappear for days in the desert. And really what he was doing was, before he became Orthodox, was he was communicating with God. And from what he shares and what I understand in our pilgrimage into the desert is that really God spoke to him, just like God spoke to Moses through the burning bush, and really relate to him the next chapter of his life and what he needs to do in order to be more connected. And the next thing you know, he became ultra-Orthodox, and I have 7 brothers and sisters. So I didn't grow up with him, as I shared before. But part of this movie, this film, is really what brought us together. Because after 33 years of not being in touch with him, I contacted him and asked him if we could go on a vision quest into the desert where he found God. And we did. And as you know, Dr. Cheryl, there was conflict, but I won't. I want to ruin it for people. But I'll just say, that's when I wanted the cameras to shut off. I was sure. I was so ready. I was so embarrassed about what happened. And, the cameras continued to roll, and it's probably the most touching part in the film.
So that's so interesting, because here is your father who went on his own transformational shamanic journey. And isn't that kind of interesting, Parashakti, because that is the same process you went through?
Yes.
I mean, that's not to be lost, the irony of that, right?
Yes. Yes. Well, the narrator of my film is actually my aunt, who is a rabbi, but very, reform rabbi. First and foremost, she's a doctorate of literature and my aunt. And she says, she has a line, she has a soundbite in the film, and she says, even though Sigalit, my birth name, grew up with her mom, what I think is that she and her, something like this, she and her father are two sides of the same coin. And it's very, very true. And my father walks hand in hand intimately with Creator, and so do I. And so that's what really connects us. And so that's the beauty.
I mean, it's the beauty because you do it in such totally different ways. Like the form is different, but the essence is the same of what you experience.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
What made you, or why didn't you connect with your father over 33 years? That's a long time to be estranged.
Yeah. Well, let me paint the picture for you. When I was 7 years old and we left Israel, well, first let me track back. So my parents divorced when I was one, and then my father became ultra-Orthodox when I was three. And from what I understood from my mom is that his rabbi, when he started, you know, doing the type of work that was needed in order to become ultra-Orthodox, he had to disconnect from his past. And so we disconnected. So I believe that maybe I saw him a couple of times until the age of seven. But when I was seven, we left for the States. And then from the age of 7 to 12, I basically didn't see him. And then when I was 12, I must say, I was a total Jewish American princess who forgot her Hebrew, came back in eighth grade to Israel, and wanted nothing to do with her father. My father lived in the settlements, which I'm not proud to say, and I just felt extremely disconnected from him. And so it was easier for me just to not be connected. You know, over like the period of until I left to go to the States at age 22, you know, of course here and there I went, and it was excruciatingly painful to be with then, you know, the situation. And so I couldn't accept it. I was, again, a very rebellious teenager.
It's such an interesting journey because that outstanding unresolved business with your dad is such a powerful wound that shows up, right? I mean, if you were separated at one, that's a trauma for a one-year-old to be separated from dad. And, you know, and however that journey unfolded, which is part of your journey, right, part of his journey, and how beautiful that you've arrived at a place in your life where you have allowed, you know, the healing to happen so you can return to your father, to part of you, and be at peace and open your heart and accept the differences, accept what happened. And, I mean, it seemed from watching that documentary at the end of it, there was such a bonding and a healing with that whole extended family that you never grew up with.
Right. Right. My brothers and sisters, I call them angels. In the movie, I even call my oldest brother, Oria, a tzaddik, which means a prophet. Because they really are, they are such special, very, very, very strong family bond within the family system, like within the brothers and sisters. They're very, very tight. You know, they each have like five children, so it's a very interesting dance.
A tribe.
Yeah, and that's something that I didn't grow up with, and my mom didn't remarry, and she was both the mother and father for me, and so there is you know, I the thing, you know, that I'm still exploring this, because I feel like I never knew what it was or what it is to have a father. I don't have that. So it's not like a child who had their father until 13 and knows what it is to have a mother and father. I never had that. I never experienced him as a father. It was just in the much later years, and like now the last 8 years, that there's been this reconnection. So I know because it comes up in different areas of my life for sure. Because sure. Even though I've been married, I'm divorced, and my single days have been in the making for a really long time, and I'm very, very much wanting partnership. But I also see the part of me, like my mom, who's this warrior who is just living a life that is very joyous, but by myself, and that's not the ideal situation. So I know that there's definitely things that I have, from not having a father, have taken on as something that still needs work, and I'm there to work it.
Oh, well,
certainly,
you know,
ayahuasca.
you know the fact that your dad is still here. What, he's 95 now, right?
He's 80 years old. 81.
Oh, 80 years old. Ah. Okay, yeah. Time. I mean, you have time now that you've reconnected. Well, who knows how much time, but take advantage of, every opportunity you have to connect and be grateful and
yes.
to get to know your dad, because healing that relationship is the key to creating truly, a whole relationship
mm-hmm.
in your life, right? So,
mm-hmm.
so going back
mm-hmm.
to your dad, from just my perspective, is so critical for you to clear the way to get
yes.
what your heart's desire. How beautiful.
Yes.
How beautiful.
Yeah, I have to just share with you. So, the wonderful man that I was married to is Arab. And when we did our second wedding in Israel, in Jerusalem, my father did a lot of research to see if he can even attend, because I was marrying an Arab, a Muslim. And after many, many different inquiries with different rabbis, and also like a 5-hour sit with Dr. Gabriel Cousins, who married us in Jerusalem, he came with the family, but he did not participate. And prior to me getting married, I was actually doing a Native American, believe it or not, Native American spirit dance in Israel. I was co-facilitating it with Dr. Gabriel Cousins in Israel. And my father heard the call of Creator of God and had to come and ask me the big question. He traveled, because he doesn't have a car, so he traveled like hours in Trempim, which means he was getting, putting his thumb out and getting a lift, I guess you would call it, people giving him rides. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Giving him rides. It took him like 5 hours to get to where I was doing the spirit dance. And I was fasting on water. Or no, I wasn't. I don't even think we were drinking water, maybe. Well, yeah, we were drinking water. But I was fasting, and he shows up out of nowhere. We're in the arbor that we built. We're, doing this 4-day ceremony with other Israelis, and he says, yeah, I come to ask you just one question. And I said, what? He says, are you sure you love him? And I got so angry. I was so angry. I said, how dare you ask me that question? He says, yes, I traveled. And he had mud. It was raining. It was pouring. He had mud all over him. I couldn't believe it. And of course, he was just like, mothers are always right. Fathers are always right. Years later, I learned that one.
what an amazing story. That's a beautiful story to kind of end our conversation, because unfortunately
yes.
we've come to
yes.
the end of the show. But thank you so much
yes,
for sharing
absolutely.
That. Yeah, and I know your dad is going to be part of this retreat, this trip you're taking
yes.
People on to in Israel.
Yes.
So you'll get to meet
yes.
Parashakti's dad, who's, I'd love to meet him, this beautiful mystic. Anyway, we have
yes.
to go because we're at the end of the show. Thank
okay.
you, Parashakti,
okay.
parashakti.org.
Thank you so much,
and,
Dr. Cheryl.
You're so welcome. I got a scoot. So remember, everyone, make this week filled with love, peace, and harmony. Bye for now.